Okay, so today is February 15th, 2017. Ed May and I are sitting here with George Lasseter Jr. So thanks for coming.
You're welcome.
Okay, so we have a list of questions that we just kind of asked to get the, you know, juices flowing.
Sure.
So when and where were you born?
I was born January 18th, 1970 at the hospital in Petoskey. My parents were living over by Advance.
So you're by far our youngest interviewee. So what are your parents' names?
My dad is George Thomas Lasseter. My mom is Margaret Elizabeth Lasseter. Her maiden name is Hawley. H-A-W-L-E-Y.
Perfect. And what did they do?
Well, my mom has a master's degree. She was a speech pathologist, basically a speech therapist. She did that for quite a long time. They moved up here from Wayne, Michigan, in, I want to say, 63 or 4. She worked for Sharm as a speech pathologist. My dad was a teacher. And then he became a probation officer, then sheriff. And my mom, in about 84, she went to work for the hospice of Northwest Michigan. She ran the hospice for about 32 years. She's retired now.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you've lived here your whole life?
Whole life, yeah.
Yeah. So you went to school here.
Yeah.
So you graduated in what year? 88, okay.
Yeah.
All right. So what do you remember about your grandparents?
My grandpa, well, both my grandparents on my dad's side died before I was born. And my grandpa on my mom's side was a very well-educated businessman in a town called Wayne, down by Detroit. He owned a lumber yard and a coal yard, this old coal, because people heated with coal back then. And just a really neat, short, scrappy little guy, very smart, but really nice guy. And he died in 84. I was 14, and I was always sad he died then because I was just getting old enough to be able to appreciate him and his memories. And he was born in 1900 in Detroit. And my grandma was, a stay-at-home mom, didn't have to work. And she died, I think, in 92. Her name was Lillian, and her parents were from Germany. Her dad was Schultz from Germany. Actually, was never here legally at all. But snuck into the country and ran a bakery in Detroit.
Wow.
Yep.
That's cool.
So they are neat people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very. So did your parents, did they meet in Wayne? Is that?
Yeah. My dad was in the Air Force, and he got out of the Air Force, got his teaching degree, and just so happened had the same job in Wayne with my mom. And I shouldn't say which school. But anyways, they had heard about jobs in a little town called Boyne City, and they both applied and both got jobs up here and moved here and built the house out on the lake in 68.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So you answered the question, where did they live? What kind of things did you do with your grandparents? Do you remember?
My grandparents were like old when I was a kid. They probably weren't, but they just seemed old, They were retired by the time I was a kid, really. So they would come up 3-4 times a year and stay with us. I remember my grandpa smoked. He was smoked since he was like 13, and he would cough and cough and hack. And my dad would always make us put the gas cans in the garage, take them out of the garage, because my dad wouldn't let him smoke in the house, but he would anyways. He'd sneak down the garage and smoke, and my dad was afraid he was going to burn the house down. With the gas cans, because we always had dirt bikes and things, we had gas cans around, and we didn't really do a whole lot with them, really. We would go down and stay with them in Detroit and Wayne. They had a really nice house, and it was always a lot of fun. But as your kid, you find stuff to do.
Right.
We would take his collection of matches. They traveled a lot. They had a lot of money, so they traveled a lot, and they would get matches from restaurants, just fancy places they stayed. When we were kids, we'd take his matches in a bowl. We'd go light up, we'd light leaves on fire and trees, and we just would, like little pyromaniacs.
Oh my God.
And he would have been so mad if he'd have known we were taking his special collection of matches and lighting fires. It's just stupid.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
What kinds of community events do you remember here in Boyne as a child?
Oh man, 4th of July was just a big deal. as a kid. You know, we lived out about a mile past Advance, almost to Whiting's Park. So to come into town for 4th of July was a big deal. You know what I mean? It really was.
Yeah.
And the parade and the fireworks. 4th of July, it seems like in the summer, was always just kind of the focal point of coming to town.
Has it always had that, you know, because there's, I mean, the people just come from everywhere for the 4th. Is it always
been
like that?
Yeah, I think so. It seemed like it was always crowded.
Okay.
It was always really, yeah. And even the park, you know, because we'd go down to watch the fireworks from Memorial Park. And I can remember lighting a firecracker, and it blew up in my hand. And I'm sure I turned the air blue, you know, with foul language, you know, as a 10-year-old, you know, whatever I could say back then. But I remember all kinds of people around me. Oh, for crying out loud.
Huh. Yeah, because my parents, they remember when they're, you know, and I remember when the band shell was down there. And they had bands that would play all day long on the 4th of July.
And it didn't seem like, it seems like yesterday.
Yeah.
That band shell was there. I was sorry they tore that down. That was a neat feature of that park.
It really was.
Yeah. Yep.
Do you remember the smelt room?
Yes, I do. Yep, we used to have, well, we still do behind my mom's house. She still lives out there, a big pond that the neighbor dug with a bulldozer. And we'd go to Advance and we'd catch smelt in buckets. And we'd put them in this pond. The pond was probably 3 foot deep. And we'd wait for the smelt to kind of float to the surface and we'd shoot them with a 22. That was a big deal.
You guys are rowdy kids.
We were kind of, yeah.
That's funny. So who did you grow up with? Like, who were some of your buddies?
Oh, yeah. They actually, Chuck Bondra and I were best friends growing up. And,
that's cool.
And then I would say probably my other best friend is a guy named Kevin Hunt. And Kevin lives in Boulder, Colorado now. Has two little girls. And a big skier, snowboarder, rock climber, really cool guy.
Mm-hmm.
Still see him once in a while. We went out to Utah and spent some time with him in the desert last spring break. Yeah, still stay in real good contact with Kevin.
Who was your favorite teacher?
Whew. Well, I tell you, I had three. Rick Casper was by far, kindergarten through 4 years of college, was the best teacher I ever had.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic teacher. Super smart guy. And he was amazing as a teacher because he could the whole classroom, you know, the dumb ones like me and the smart ones, as he's going through his lesson, he taught science. He could make sure everybody was still on track with what he was talking, his teaching, and he could sort of sense if you were lost or daydreaming, and then he would kind of bring it back in up to speed with everything. And just a neat guy. I mean, local, born and raised here too, so I still stay in touch with Rick and visit with him quite a bit. And then I had Bob McCullough, was a football coach, and fantastic guy. Taught me how to lift weights, and you know, I've religiously lifted weights since freshman year in high school. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then Boyne City History, Bob Morgage.
Yep.
Fantastic teacher. Great, super great guy. Still stay in touch with him, talk with him frequently. And I owe so much of my appreciation of history to my dad and Bob Morgage.
Mm.
Bore my family to death with, well, that's where the broom handle factory was, and that's where Weights for No Number One was, and taking them around town and showing them those things and like, whatever. But
that's cool.
Yeah, this love for history. And thanks to Bob Morgage, really.
I know, it's so sad that you don't get that in school anymore.
They don't
have the time to focus on local history.
It is. And it was required.
Yeah, right.
It was required. Did you have it?
I was like the very last class that didn't have to have it. So he retired when I was supposed to be taking it. So I never had it. Yeah, I know. I'm very, very disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
So
it was required in 7th grade when I went through school, and then they moved it to high school, and I loved it so much I took it as a peer tutor mid-junior, senior year, just to go through it all over again.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You peer tutor like the younger kids, and I think it was maybe a freshman class then, just to do it all over again.
And it's crazy to think that he not a Boyne City native, you know?
Yeah, Charlevoix. Charlevoix,
right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of cool.
It is. Yep.
So when and where did you meet your wife?
We laugh about that. I don't know. Neither one of us remember.
Really?
No.
Is she from Boyne?
No. She's a Pudgy. She's from Grand Rapids area, a town called Cedar Springs.
Okay.
And her parents were both teachers, and they retired, and they always had a summer place up here over by Ironton, Chautauqua Shore Estates. And we think, I know we had some mutual friends, other summer people, and we probably met through them. And I worked at the Advance store as a job, you know, through high school and college. And I laughed that we probably met there, and she, you know, couldn't leave me alone. After she saw me working in there and stalked me.
The Advance store.
The Advance store clerk guy.
Yeah,
the guy with sticky pop bottle returnables all over his hands and sweaty because it was so hot in that store. Great store. Great. Love that job.
And you have one child.
Yes. We have a son named Luke. He's 16, sophomore in high school. Yep. Great big galoot of a kid.
He's a super nice kid. I printed some stuff. He was working on a project last week, maybe?
Oh, the 3D printer. You did that whole thing.
Yeah. No
Those
problem.
Turned out cool.
Well, yeah. There was a couple issues, but...
He took the sail off that one boat and he broke it.
Oh, no.
So he just had to hot glue it on there.
Oh, bummer.
Yeah. Thanks, though. Yeah,
no problem. He's a great kid.
Yeah.
So you were mentioning your job. So what was your first job?
Well, my first job was washing dishes at the Walden Lake Inn. And it was like a nightmare. That was the worst thing I've ever done. It was horrible. Mm-hmm. Summertime, it was busy, and it was just gross. I hated it. And then I rake leaves at Camp Seagull. And then, you know, and that's a like real job. Summer jobs, we always like cut grass and, you know, shoveled the roofs and did that stuff to make money. But real jobs, yeah. And then, and I probably, I want to say my, must have been my sophomore year, I started working at the Advance store in the summers. And it was like the, you know, bottle guy and bagged the groceries and stocked the shelves and filled the beer cooler and that stuff. And I stayed with that through, almost through college.
Mm.
Great job. Loved it there. Met so many cool people.
I bet, yeah.
All day.
Yep.
It's a little funny when you say the Advance store, because it was the Advance, or I was standing in Advance, reading a piece of paper, that the history of this area really hit me.
Really?
I was reading the deed that Porter signed to buy the property when he built the Virgil Mill in Advance.
Yeah.
And I got down to the bottom of the deed, and it was under the auspices of the President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
Yeah, because that store was built in, I want to say 1865?
And I'm standing there thinking, he bought that, I'm standing looking at the footings of the mill he built, and slavery was in existence.
Right.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
But I can appreciate you when you say Advance, because Advance had the mill before Boyan City did.
It was the first grist mill on the lake,
first grist mill on the lake.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I was talking with Wava, she's from East Jordan, and she was saying, we were talking about the porters, and she was saying, well, the porters kind of made East Jordan. And I asked her if it was the same porters that were, you know, out in Advance, and she didn't know, so it sounds like it probably
was. It is,
Yeah.
And I think Mary Jason is a porter.
Oh.
Yeah, I believe it. Yep. She's quite the history. So is her sister.
Okay.
She'd be a great one to talk to.
Yeah, definitely.
Lived down on Bushman's Bay Road.
So I forgot to ask, do you have any siblings, or are you an only child?
I do. No, I have an older brother named Tom. He lives up on Court Street and works at Stafford's in Petoskey. He's a waiter, great guy. A little smaller than me. Not as good looking. He'd probably argue that part. But and he lives with a really nice girl named Tracy Conte. She's a CPA. And they have a dog. It's like their kid.
No kids.
No kids. It's like, that's their kid. Really. And then I have an older sister who's 4 years older. She's 50. She's in Florida, Fort Lauderdale area. Amy.
Got it.
Yeah. Her name's Husak, H-U-S-A-K. She's divorced now. But that was her married name.
And you all grew up here in Boyan City?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
Got it. So what other jobs have you had?
Boy.
Did you get right into law enforcement?
No, I didn't. Well, I read out of college, I did, yeah. But, you know, I did some construction. I worked for a couple of masons, Fred Ferrantino and Kirk Kajeski, doing some masonry grunt work.
Oh, yeah, those are kind of some beefy guys.
Kirk is a brute. Yeah. Another interesting guy to talk to.
Okay.
Fantastic. Historian. I can give you his number, too, if you need it.
Okay.
Super guy. But I did that for, you know, on and off in the summers. Worked for Frank Shader, too, doing construction. And then...
Young Frank.
Middle Frank. Middle, yeah. Frank the second, I think, is. There's three or four now.
Yeah.
I think there might be four. But yeah. And right out of college, then I got a job. I worked part-time for the police department in East Jordan. And then I worked in Antrim County for the sheriff's department for, I don't know, for a couple of years. And then I started for Charlevoix County.
What college did you attend?
My college career is pathetic. It's a sad story of running out of money and having to, you know what I mean? So I went to Nuckmuck for a year, Petoskey, and then I wanted to play football, college football, so I went to Western to play football. Didn't work out. And so I stayed at Western for a semester, ran out of money, went back to Nuckmuck, went to Lake State the following fall, ran out of money, went back to Nuckmuck, finally got my two-year degree, and then I went to Delta College in Bay City for the police academy. Mm. So I'm like 20 credits short of a bachelor's degree, but there's no real good reason to get it at this point. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? We don't get any more money or anything.
You're right.
To have it, so.
Yeah.
I probably never will.
Right.
Yeah. Mm.
It's kind of like me. I started out at Nuckmuck, then went to Lake State, and then I transferred to Wayne State University, so.
Did you finish?
Yeah. I have a master's in library science.
Oh, you're a smart one. Yeah.
Yeah. So, this is kind of a hard one, but what kinds of things do you think were most important to the people in the community when you were growing up?
Boy, oh boy, oh boy, what would have been important? Sports. I would say sports.
Okay.
Were a big deal. You know, I always played Little League and football, basketball, and ran track, and boy, it was just always such a community thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even Little League games, there'd always be a million people there. And it seemed like it. And even the minor leagues, there'd be a lot of people at the games.
Right.
Sports have always been a big part of this town. A big draw.
And you've obviously, like me, you know, seen Boyne City change. Like, it's become something that I didn't really think that it would become, you know, growing up here.
Yeah.
It's kind of really, it's kind of come into its own, you know, it's a tourist destination and things like that. So could you have seen that coming?
No.
From the Boyne City you grew up?
Not really. You know, we grew up on the lake. So, just for example, we always had a ski boat. My buddy Kevin from Colorado and our other buddy Tommy Miller. And we skied. I worked to get money for gas to ski, you know, to water ski. And we were in that boat. It seemed like we weren't working, we were skiing, water skiing. And, you know, you got to know the lake real well, you know. And I remember, like, the first million-dollar house that came up was over Oyster Bay. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe it. You know, million-dollar house. Now that's
right.
Nothing.
Yeah.
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. So no, I didn't see it coming. I really didn't.
Yeah, me neither.
No.
And it's kind of cool how it's kept its charm, you know.
Yes.
Because like you see some other communities and they kind of just blow up and they're huge. You know, mm-hmm. Like Petoskey has even really changed a lot.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting that they've been able to kind of keep some of the small town features.
It is nice, you know, and like this Stiggs Brewery down here. I'm really impressed how they did. How they did they kept the wood and they kept the look of the building.
Yeah.
You know, what it looked like before. Even right. When I remember it was a railroad museum building. You know, it still looks kind of the same. It's changed, obviously, but they kept the look.
I didn't know that was a museum.
Oh, gosh. When? Early Saturdays?
That started out as the White Mill Lumber Company office.
Right, I knew that. And then they moved
it. And it was down there. Roughly where the Chamber of Commerce is today. It was down in that area.
Oh.
And after the big mill fire, they moved it up here. And it was a wood frame building.
Mm.
And then they put a foundation under it, bricked it, and added the safe in the upper and lower floors. It's been there ever since. But originally that was down by closer to the mouth of the river.
Mm. You're right.
Frame building.
Yeah, you're right.
It was moved there.
And so they converted it to a museum sometime in the 70s?
Well, after the railroad was... When the railroad came from being a railroad to a tourist train, they put the museum in there, and also in the roundhouse, the mm-hmm. old roundhouse.
Yeah. Oh, it was a museum also.
And then when they when the railroad was sold and auctioned off, everything was auctioned off and it went in all directions.
Hmm. Wow.
Yep.
Crazy.
It is.
The old steam locomotive number 18 has been totally rebuilt and is running on the East Coast.
In Attica, New York.
Yeah.
Yep.
Wow.
And the
yep.
the caboose is downstate Michigan.
Kelly.
Railroad club. And the old snowplow is in a railroad museum in Wisconsin.
Yep.
Wow. That's cool.
It is. That's tough.
So is there anything that you miss from Boyne City back in the day?
Yeah, I do. You know, he talked about the roundhouse. It was such a neat building.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, remember, did you see where that was down, like where the Alpine Chocolate House was in Cafe Sante? Yeah, that was such a neat feature. And the old water tower and the little old tracks. And they tore that down about 84. Yep, I remember looking at that as a kid. And here again, you know, I was just starting to get really interested in that stuff.
Right.
And then I tear it down.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
That stuff. So I think that that's some of that's sad that was torn down, that couldn't have been preserved.
Right.
And I understand the bricks were crumbly and it just wouldn't have been not worth it, but that kind of stuff I think is cool.
Well, George can remember when he was young in Boyne City, there was over 4 miles of railroad track inside the city limits.
Wow.
That's a lot of steel track.
It's a lot of track. Yeah. Yep. And I remember in about 80, I want to say it was 83, the city did a neat thing where they offered some kind of a tax break if you improved your storefront.
Oh.
So, like water and lake and all this, and they sold all businesses, you know, whoever put that money instead of paying taxes into the storefronts. And they came and redid all the sidewalks and the streets. They tore out the old wooden pipes and things, the water pipes were wood.
Mm.
And it just, I mean, it changed the look of the town and it made it so much nicer.
Okay.
You know,
mm-hmm.
not so run down.
Right.
Very nice. I think that was a good thing.
We were looking at some of the old photographs earlier and there was one of the post office. And one thing that struck me was there were all these trees in downtown Boyne City, which was really kind of cool, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
So, and it, I don't know, it just made it seem kind of charming.
A little more charming, yeah.
Yeah.
The old maples are dying off. And
yeah.
I think I've got two left.
Yeah.
I love them.
Yeah.
They're dying. Yeah.
So that's too bad. Anything else that you can think of that you missed besides some of the old buildings? And well, did you have a favorite restaurant?
Probably sounds kind of dumb, but it was I think my favorite place to go when I was a kid was the B&C on the end of Glens. Or do you remember that?
I don't, but I've heard lots about it. So
it was they had the best chicken gravy, but it was they had like the buffet. Remember that? And it was tiny, I'm sure, because that's like where the pharmacy is now. You know, but it seemed like such a big place, and you're a little kid. I don't know. It's just something else.
Yeah.
I like to go there. You know, I like that.
At least you didn't say Cass and Don's.
Right.
I remember Cass and Don's. I didn't ever eat there. I'm sure.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, let me swing this towards an area a little bit different. Sheriff Department.
Mm-hmm.
When did you join the Charlevoix County Sheriff?
In April of 94.
And then how many years have you been there now?
23.
23 years.
Wow.
And you've gone from basically a novice to lieutenant.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. I started off as a bailiff, actually,
mm-hmm.
in April. Worked as a bailiff and then corrections, and then on the road. Yeah, so I've kind of done worn a lot of hats there.
And you're also a certified diver for the Sheriff's Department.
Yeah.
Oh,
yep.
Wow.
Yep. I'm the dive master for the Sheriff's Department, so I run the dive team.
Oh, that's cool.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What training do you remember the best from all the training you've received?
My one of my partners, Jim Nauka, dive partners, and I went to Virginia, and we were taught by a guy named Mike Berry, who runs the whole state police Virginia dive team. And he runs, his company's called UCI, Underwater Criminal Investigations, and the class was Underwater Criminal Investigations.
Wow.
And this guy is the poobah. He's written a book. And so we spent a week with him doing evidence recovery and real methodical searches and things underwater, and changed my view of, you know, public safety diving.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It really did. So, yeah, that would be.
Well, you, if I remember correctly, you dove on the sailboat that capsized in the Mackinac race.
Yeah, we got the bodies out.
Two years ago.
Well, no longer than that. It's probably been four or five now. The one that flipped over.
Oh, right.
The two people were still in, kind of tattered to it.
Yeah.
And I recovered that body down at Skeekamog Lake this weekend.
Oh, wow.
Someone better that went out in the lake. And,
oh.
Yeah.
That sucks.
It was, yeah. Yeah, felt bad for the family. I mean, you always do. But it was,
right.
It was rough. They spent all night there, you know, camping out at the boat launch and had a little bonfire, and there's probably 30 people there, family and friends. Yeah, it was terrible.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's part of the job, and that's one thing that I find really satisfying is when you can, you know, anybody who's been through the grieving process like that, closure is so important.
Right.
You know, if they have somebody to say goodbye to, that is huge for those people. Like, not ever recovering a body is a terrible thing, because it's never complete for them. They'll never grieve truly, properly.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. Probably because there's still part of them that hopes that it's not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
That's rough.
That is rough. Well, what a nice, I mean, I hate to say nice, but it's good that you're able to do that and provide that to families.
Sure, sure. And they're usually very appreciative. And these people were super appreciative and polite and, you know, very community. They were Native American family and friends, and they're very community-oriented people anyways. You know, and his mother was telling us, you know, I'm just praying for you guys. I just want you guys to be safe. And, you know, because it was kind of a dangerous at night for us because we had ice and open water and some really dark, unclear water, so it was really a dangerous deal. But I was very impressed with the family that they were. Just want you guys to be safe. I'm praying that you'll be safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, don't be concerned about us. You know,
right.
We're concerned about you.
Right.
You know what I mean? That's the way I look at it. But yeah.
Well, it certainly changed from when you first became an officer in Charlevoix to what it is today. The training requirements, the membership requirements,
The
schooling.
Mm-hmm.
It's
things have changed a lot. Yes. Yep.
What's the biggest change you can see that's impacted the Charlevoix County Sheriff's Department?
Technology.
Yeah.
Is the biggest change. Yep. It's, you know, when I started, we typed reports on a typewriter. You know what I mean? You had a typewriter.
Right.
When if you had a computer, which we did have some then too, the program didn't even have Word. You couldn't. Wasn't a word processor. If you messed up on a paragraph, you had to find a way to delete words, to put new ones. It was really tricky.
Yeah.
But, you know, now it's you really got to be a technology person, which I'm not. I'm kind of a dinosaur, so I have to find these young guys or find a fourth grader
to
show me how to do so many things. I'm
Luke, help me.
Can you help me? Exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I just got a new cell phone, and the thing drives me crazy trying to figure out the internet. What am I going to do with that?
Yeah.
We'll talk on it. You can do everything.
And it's amazing, too, the ability, crimes, I'm sure, using technology has probably made your job a lot more complicated as
well. It has.
Well.
It has. Yep. It has. I mean, we can be more effective at times, but it does. It can be almost, the use of technology can almost be endless.
Yeah.
Well, it's almost an oxymoron. In one side of the sword, it helps you. In the other side of the sword, you've got video, you've got camera, you've got the opposition has more communication and fake pictures of it before you do.
Well, right, exactly. You're that's true. One thing I've noticed too, which has been kind of frustrating in my job, is a lot of these TV shows, these CSI shows, people think we can take DNA off a rock that comes through a window, hand it to the lab guy, and get it back in 20 minutes. Who threw the rock through your window?
Right, yeah.
You know, that takes $3,000 in 9 months to get that back. And, you know, there's a fingerprint. You know, find who that is. Well, that takes 6 months. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In these CSI shows, I think people expect that that's real life. It's not. I mean, it could be in New York, but.
Not in Boyne City.
It isn't here.
Charlevoix County.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Your jurisdiction Are you confined to Charlevoix County? Do you have the right to chase outside the county?
Yes, we can.
Okay.
Yep.
It's kind of known as hot pursuit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we can leave it. We can leave this.
And how well does your jurisdiction run with the tribal areas? I remember at one time, I believe that the Charlevoix County officers were sworn into the tribal, and the tribal were sworn into the county, so you could interface.
Yeah, it's with the change in sheriffs and the things are changing over. We haven't dealt with a whole lot of that yet. And honestly, they take care of most of their own problems. You know, the only place that we generally go is the reservation over on Rainy Road. You know, their police are in Shelby Town.
Mm-hmm.
So if something happens there, they're
right.
2 hours away, you know. So we take care of most of their stuff. But we don't get as many problems there as we used to. We used to be there quite frequently. But yeah, it seems to be things that have kind of calmed down. I don't know why. Yeah.
Older and wiser, maybe.
There's always another generation.
Yeah, exactly. True.
I'm sure they wondered how we were going to make it.
Yeah, I'm sure they did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so you followed in your father's footsteps.
Mm-hmm.
So if Luke says to you, hey, Dad, I really want to follow in yours, would you encourage that? Has he expressed an interest in doing that yet? No.
You know, I don't know if I would encourage him to do that or not.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, in this day and age, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. You know, we've had a really some hard knocks from obviously things you see in the news and things here in the last few years, and I think for the most part up here we're a little insulated from a lot of that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I think for the most part the community and the people appreciate us. Or they do in Ferguson, Missouri, or different places like that where these hotbeds have been. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's real smart. Luke is very smart in indoor computers and robotics and science and things. So.
Your dad, when we interviewed him, he struck me as a kind of a sensitive guy. And I don't know if that was just, you know,
first impressions.
Okay.
He is.
So you just wonder, you know, how does that... You know, with doing the job that you do, how does that affect your day-to-day life? You know, I imagine it would be difficult not to carry some of the things with you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You do. Yeah, you do. And you know, I'm a Christian guy, and I pray for people. That helps a lot, having that faith. But, yeah, to like I always said, you get a front row seat to everybody's tragedies.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like this thing with this weekend.
Yes.
You know what I mean? You're right there, mm-hmm. you know, and part of it. And it's, you know, not to sound hardened, but I've been at it for a long time,
mm-hmm.
you know, almost 25 years in the job, and not much bothers me anymore.
Mm.
I don't take much away. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That really, like, ugh. The only thing that does is kids. If kids get hurt or kids get killed, I don't want to be there. That's
right.
That's the only thing that... that bothers me anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I'm just thinking, as a parent myself, you know, that I probably would want to not encourage my child to go into a field where they would have to be, you know, exposed to that kind of stuff.
Sure.
So.
But it wasn't my first choice.
No, it wasn't my first choice.
No, I wanted to work with the fish. I wanted to be a marine biologist.
Mm.
And I had there's 300 or 400 level class in biology. And we had to dissect sharks, cats, and pigeons. And as part of the test, you know, you'd have like the 20 students' cast laid out with the little flags. What muscle is this? What nerve is that? What, you know, bone problem? And I remember I got a C in the class, and I struggled. It was hard. And I liked the instructor, and he liked me because we always talked about football.
Mm-hmm.
And a really cool guy, Mr. Ross. And after the class was over, he says, you know, that C was a gift. You might want to change majors.
Ouch.
What's taking Mr. Ross?
Ouch.
Well,
but you're kind of close being a diver, you know. You kind of get in with the marine life and stuff.
Sure, absolutely,
so.
Yeah. And that's probably part of it, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I've always been around the water and enjoy the water, but yeah. So,
yeah.
That was, That was my first choice, but not smart enough.
No.
Do you foresee any major changes coming with the Charlevoix County Department? Any major needs? What is the...
No, I don't think so. I think we're sitting pretty well. You know, we're going to probably in the next 5 years probably see a lot of retirements and then new guys coming in. Mm-hmm. And that's cyclical. I mean, we had that about 10 years ago. We had like 7 guys left and hired 7 new guys. And, you know, so like myself, and you know, I got like 2.5 years and I can retire.
Do you have a really nice crop of new guys to kind of take over?
Yeah, we hired a great bunch. Well, they're on their own now. They're up to speed. And, yeah, I don't have to worry about them anymore. But yeah, no, we hired a great bunch of people.
What's the size of your force? Like, how many people do you have?
I think we have 12, 13. 13 on the road. Road patrol. And then 3 detectives. 2 on the drug team and 1 regular, just full-blown detective, Mike Wheat. Yeah.
Nice.
I mean, plus the jail and plus, you know, we've got, I gotta say, we got 50-some employees, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's all. Yeah. All the correction officers, if that's the right term,
that is, yeah.
For those in jail, plus you got the bailiffs and the court officers that cover there. And I've observed the interface that I think is rather amazing. It's, you need somebody, we holler from the hospital, well, we didn't know if we had a road officer, if we had a bailiff, if we had somebody from the correction department, but they, you know, all 3 would show up and bail us out. So it was just, it was nice to work that way.
Mm-hmm. That's good to know.
When we ran the flag up the flagpole, somebody showed up.
Yeah. Yeah.
It seems like you have a good working relationship with the other law enforcement agencies in the area, which is nice.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, typically rivalries come in, or rivalries is probably the wrong word, but friction comes in between local officers and the state police.
Mm-hmm.
That's not us. We don't have that here.
Nice.
Yeah, we don't. And where you see that is bigger areas where there's more guys. Mm-hmm. Because up here, there's not very many of us, so we all rely on each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? If I need backup, I don't care if your uniform's pink. You know what I mean? You better come running. I need you. But, we were all work really well together. You know, the state police and us and the cities and the DNR and the tribal officers. But, yeah, you get some places downstate and there's friction.
Mm-hmm.
It's between the county depths and the state.
Yeah.
We don't have it.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's really nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Good people.
So what do you think the biggest change coming to Boyne City is?
Boy, let me think. What is the biggest change coming to Boyne City? It's all happening so fast, it's hard to tell.
I know City Hall is kind of cool.
City Hall is really neat. Yeah, yeah. Probably, I would think, whatever they're going to do with, besides City Hall, the park across from Family Fair.
Oh, right. The
green open space. Or, yeah. Probably whatever happens with that, I think will be a big... It's a good bonus for the town.
Oh, definitely.
Well, because you hear the local grumblings, like, geez, every time I put a condo up, you can't see less than the lake.
Right.
You know what I mean? So then we get this big open area that, beautiful.
Yeah.
You know, and if they're going to put docks out there, what they're going to do for more boating, boat slips and whatnot, you know, is everybody squawks because there's not enough boat slips in this town.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And one thing I was going to talk to Barb Brooks about from the City Hall, Harbor Springs has moorings that you can rent out in the bay.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They're all numbered and things, and you rent them for the weekend or the summer or whatever it is. That, to me, I think it would be a good thing for the city to do.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Good revenue generator.
It would be.
Yep.
And as a diver, it'd be a good thing to maintain.
Oh, right. Yeah.
One of the things to remember is when you're talking about sailboats, a larger sailboat generally is a deeper draft
mm-hmm.
than the average powerboat. And a larger sailboat belongs on a mooring. It's easier to get off a mooring, easier to come into a mooring
sure.
than it is to have the wind trying to blow you through the dock.
Right.
Some way to track different group, maybe?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Well,
yeah,
if you as you look at the larger marinas, where there are more boats and larger boats, you'll see a great deal of moorings. And this is a mooring area, and the Charted is a mooring area. So you know if you're coming in at night, it's a mooring area, let's slow it down real well and take a look, because we're going to have a bunch of sailboats moored out here, and most of them won't have lights on, and most of them don't have radar reflectors on.
Right.
So it's visual, you're going into a small hornet's nest.
Yeah.
But it is a way of providing more boating.
Yeah.
Periodic.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah.
What's something that you hope never changes in Boynton City?
The small town feel.
Yeah.
The locals. The local people in the small town.
Mm-hmm.
I hope it doesn't become a, you know, an area where the locals aren't here.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Because sometimes, you know, we walk the dog down and stroll the streets, and I might run into four people I know.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Jeez, a piece. What's going on here? You know?
Yeah.
So, without the local people, it would be a whole different place.
Yep. I definitely, that's one thing. And, you know, it's so funny because working with the public, you know, you get to see all kinds of people. Mm-hmm. And one of the, I think, so cool about Boynton City is that, for the most part, people here are really, really good, which I really,
mm-hmm.
I like that. It makes doing what, you know, working with the public that much more worthwhile.
Sure.
Because, you know, they appreciate it. They're, you know, friendly. And so it's nice.
It is nice.
It's
yeah.
a good community we have here.
It is. Yeah. We're fortunate. For sure.
Well, do you have anything else you want to talk about, Eddie?
No, I'm good.
We've almost used up an hour of his time.
George, anything you want to throw at us?
No, I just want to tell you, you know, my favorite hobby is shipwreck diving. History.
Yep.
Wow, big surprise. But, you know, I would say this to me, you know, I'm a technical diver, trimix, you know, mixed gas, real deep diving, that kind of stuff. And that to me is the most fascinating thing, to go, you know, on a basically a time capsule that,
mm-hmm.
you know, sunk maybe 100 and some of them, you know, 150 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you find a shoe or you find a piece of pottery or you find something, to think that that's the same as it was the day it sunk.
Right.
It's fantastic.
Yeah, that is cool.
Fantastic. I hope more people become interested in that, because that's history that you can touch and you can see. One thing I love to do in the spring, in the fall, is dive out here, you know, like off Peninsula Beach and some of those, because there's so much stuff out there. People would
have
no idea. You know, take your kids out there and snorkel on that stuff. It's wood and bottles and artifacts and railroad ties and spikes and just you name it.
That's cool.
It's out there.
Yeah.
You know? So I really love getting on the water and looking at that stuff.
So have you been over to the Thunder Bay Marine Sanctuary over in Alpena?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's a little north of Thunder Bay is the best place, I think, is called Presque Isle.
Okay.
There's some really good shipwrecks that are really preserved. And they're deep. It's all deep stuff.
And so they just let anyone go?
Yeah.
Wow.
You just tie up there. You know, you get the GPS coordinates, and you take your boat over there, and you just tie up and go. You know, I mean, they're buoyed, most of them. Well, pretty much all of them are.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Groups buoy them, so you're not dragging anchors on them and hooking them and damaging them and whatnot. And,
mm-hmm.
and it's you know, it brings in tourism, money.
Wow.
But it's fantastic. You know, to be inside of a cabin of a ship.
Yeah.
Or even a wooden ship. You know what I mean? They may have sank in the 1880s.
Wow, that is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, when we're talking wooden ships, have you ever been to one of the Three Brothers?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
You met,
yep.
Assuming you're familiar with the Three Brothers, it was White owned it.
Yep.
And it was the one that you see the pictures of with the multi-thousand board feet of lumber on.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. We were lucky when they found that. It was buried in the sandbar. They didn't know it. Nobody could find it. They knew it sank. It ran ashore in a storm, 1912, I want to say.
I have to look it up.
Ran around there, yeah. And then they never could find it.
Hmm.
And one of the Manitou, South or North Manitou, I forget. But then in one spring in about 90, 5, perhaps, sandbar that was out in front of the ranger station was gone. It had washed away, and there's the shipwreck inside
just
the sandbar.
Right there?
Yeah.
Wow.
Right there. Yeah. In the front end split open, and the stern is
the current
intact.
In the lake, especially after a storm, will move sandbars. I mean, something the size of the red building over here will move. And what's there when the sand leaves is something you haven't seen in 100 to 200 years.
Yeah.
And that's what happened to the three brothers.
That's cool. That's really cool.
It was cool. And it was cool because on the stern of it was painted three brothers of buffalo. It must have been out of buffalo. Somebody's rich out of Buffalo, New York. And nice white clear paint. And the zebra mussels, I'm sure I'll cover that up by now. But there was fire hoses. There was a nice brass nozzle. Had to be 2 foot long. The fire hose dangling off the stern right down to the bottom. And the nozzle sitting on the bottom. I thought, that's not one for this world. Somebody probably stole that pretty quick. And it did.
So they just kind of leave it all there? They don't try to recover any of it? Or
well, they would if they knew where it was. But it just must have got very pretty quickly. And they just forgot about it, you know.
There are some laws applying to shipwrecks in areas that they've said dive only, look, and leave no tracks.
Yeah, you can't take anything.
You can't bust them up and take anything. In some areas, some are still kind of open. Then you come up with the other law of whose is it? Is it a French vessel in American waters
right. That
was sailed by the French military? And then then you wind up with maritime law and the ownership and who's paying for it. And if you find something, how much of it do you get, do I get, or does the state or the government get? It's better to look and leave it alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. That's kind of cool.
And most of that stuff, you know, the guys that used to steal that stuff, and some guys still do, winds up in a box in your garage and rotting away to nothing.
And bringing you bad karma.
Bringing you bad karma and just leave it there.
Yep.
You know, if you don't preserve it properly, it's just going to be. And that's actually one thing I've been working on. Down here, off Peninsula Beach, we found a cart, maybe. It looks like a small railroad car. It's probably as long as these two tables and about 3 foot wide with big steel iron wheels, spoked wheels. And I think it was used on the trams to haul stuff out on the docks.
Oh, cool.
And we found that in the water out here. And I talked to the Corps of Engineers and the DEQ about raising it and putting it. And I talked to Mike Kane, too, from the city about putting it at the museum.
Oh, sweet.
When the city hall gets done, putting down some train tracks. And there's rail down there, too. And sandblast that and preserve the rail and put that.
Oh, super cool.
Yeah.
That'd be really cool.
It's going to be kind of a neat project. Yeah. Just got to find a way to preserve it properly.
Right.
Because it's wood and wood and iron. So
it
gets closer to spring. I'm going to get a hold of NOAA and over in Alpena and see if they can give me some recommendations how to preserve it.
That'd be good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be really, what a treasure for the museum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's kind of a goofy thing because sometimes we find it, sometimes you don't, sometimes you can't find it. The wood shifts around so much down there and it just blows up and then blows away.
Yeah. So you can see it one day and then it's gone the next kind of
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah. It kind of scares me sometimes. I think, oh no, somebody else find it and steal it in the middle of the night. Oh no.
Oh,
and you come back and next year, you're like, oh, there it is. So.
Huh. Crazy.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, anything else, Eddie?
No.
All right, I'm going to turn this
off. George, thank you very much for coming.